couldn't help but wonder, if taxes are truly unavoidable, why do they always feel like a bad date we never agreed to? Welcome to Tax and the City. I'm Julia Tatje from Taxum, your personal tax boutique in Zurich. Here we talk taxes simply and honestly. Sometimes just you and me, sometimes with guests, always rooted in real life. And just like that, something mandatory becomes a little more delightful. I couldn't help but wonder, when did passports become part of a life strategy? There was a time when you were simply born somewhere and that was that. Your passport wasn't something you optimized, it was just background. But lately, I'm seeing something different. People are thinking about mobility the way they think about investments. Optionality, flexibility, security. And of course, whether anyone plans for it or not, when you move across borders, your financial and tax life tends to follow quietly behind you. Which is why I find today's guest so fascinating, because when I first heard what she does, I thought, wait, this is an actual profession? Hi, Liana Weckerli. She works at Henley & Partners Switzerland, part of a global firm with over 70 offices advising families on residence and citizenship planning. And that actually is a thing. So in other words, she helps people redesign where they belong. Liana, I'm really excited to have you here. Hello.
Hey, Julia. Pleasure. Pleasure to be a guest at your podcast. You're quite a famous person.
Not famous yet, but yeah. So how does someone end up advising ultra high net worth individuals, families on second residences and citizenships? This is not exactly something you mentioned at a career fair. How did that happen?
I'm so glad they actually asked me that question, because I don't remember anyone ever asked me. But we talk with my colleagues, and often we talk about this topic because there isn't a degree at the university that you can go and study and just suddenly, you know, join investment migration company and start working. I can tell you, we all came from different kinds of background, which creates this amazing space to be around amazing people, colleagues, and everyone is enriched life of the other through his own personal experience, which is something that I really love.
So you're coming from very different backgrounds at Henley.
I'm a teacher of English and French, so I have 2 degrees. One of them is in philology, and the second one I studied international relations and politics. So I guess this is a perfect combination for something that I'm doing. When you look at my life choices and life experiences, I am holding 3 different citizenships, and I've lived in 3 different countries, which makes me, I guess, a global citizen, and which helps me to help my clients who are high net worth individuals. Very often they're successful and energetic business owners. So I help them to build their own portfolios right now at the moment, so they can be more mobile, hedge against geopolitical problems experiencing now. And I find myself in a good position to do so because I went through each step myself. Maybe I should mention how historically this trend appeared and how we came to this.
Why is it even an issue? Like, everyone has a citizenship.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say, exactly.
As far as I know, maybe there's even people without any citizenship.
You know, historically, we had clients from emerging countries coming to us. Okay. I started to work for Henley 12 years ago. What I noticed firsthand, majority of my clients were from countries like Russia, China, Bangladesh, Nigeria, South Africa, Egypt. So these are countries with emerging economies. And the trend continued for a few years. And normally, you can very well understand. Imagine you are born in one of these countries. You've built up a successful business, but then you're not so happy with the way politics is going in that country.
Or safety.
There is conflict. There are security concerns.
Yeah.
And you want to be in a position where you want to protect your family and acquire the passport of another country. So in case that something happens, so you can move to that country. But initially, when they would come to us, it's not necessarily that they want to move. They just want to have the possibility to do so in case something happens.
That's
exactly, that was one part of it. The second part of it, which is as important as the first one, of course, global mobility. If you're coming from an emerging country, you cannot travel to Europe visa-free. I've had so many conversations starting with, Liana, please, I do not want to spend months waiting for a visa. If I am in business and I need to travel and I need to fly here and there, I'm not in a position to queue. I don't want to queue either to the embassy or in the airport. So, you know, this was probably the main thing. Most of them acquired Caribbean passports. Some went for EU options, either whether it's a citizenship or residency. It has helped them quite a lot. But then what we started, then, of course, COVID happened.
No.
And suddenly, you're a wealthy American. You have your own private jet. You can fly anywhere. You have enough financial means. And when COVID happened, and this is something that no one expected ever, you know, these people just realized that having only one U.S. passport does not help them in any way to leave their own country and go somewhere. So in this case, it wasn't about getting access to, you know, European countries, Schengen countries or Canada, Singapore and the likes. US passport is quite a strong passport on its own. But this was a total other issue of, you know, having the means, having a strong passport, but not being able to go somewhere. So COVID was a huge motivator for
having
everyone
a second option
to realize that right now, you know, it's not just, you know, to be able to go away from, you know,
to travel,
but to be able to go away. That was the key phrase in all of this setting. And then this is how the whole inquiries moved from emerging countries to developed countries.
I mean, there's no lockdowns any longer.
There is no lockdowns, but how do you know that there won't be another lockdown sometime in the future? If you're an international business, if you want to be mobile, it's not even a question of, I think this became long time ago part of your wealth planning. Imagine you are very well diversified through your investment portfolio.
Yes.
And why can't you be diversified through your global mobility, through acquiring a couple of patents, a couple of maybe residency cards that would cover you and your whole family and your children, your future generations, in terms of business, mobility, safety, security? I think anyone right now is well-read and the industry has developed enough to realize that. What I also want to mention, when COVID happened, elections were happening at the same time. And, you know, you have a certain member of, you know, Republican Party not liking Democrats and you know, wealth taxes come into the conversation. And at this point, you're thinking, do I want to stay here if things turn out not the way I like? And do I have to be, you know, a part of, you know, somebody else's game? Or do I have the right to choose for myself and have the freedom? And naturally, if you have another passport or citizenship, it is much easier for you to make a decision to move and possibly to denounce your current citizenship. And I'm not talking about just US, and we don't have great numbers denouncing. This is true for any other country.
Mobility, I'm sure, is still a thing for a lot of your clients, but also very important is this having a second option, having a back door.
Exactly.
Having the opportunity and possibility to go somewhere else.
It's about freedom. Yeah. It's about not belonging to just one state and play by its rules, although I have lots of respect for that. It's about your personal freedom. What I've noticed also in the last few years, we had lots of conflicts going on. And now, if before we had people from
Africa,
emerging countries coming to us, South Africans, Africans, Russians, Ukrainians, Belarusians, Egypt, as I mentioned. So right now we have Germans and French and Europeans, especially in the light of the conflict between, you know, Russia and Ukraine, searching for places that are far away from Europe that have enough clean water and enough resources. So in case there's like a doomsday scenario, they have a place to go. And this is another trend that we're seeing. So the trend has become global, and that's a fact. And when we're talking about even Swiss people and Europeans in general, they prefer options in Latin America or Southeast Asia. I could give an example of, let's take Mauritius, for example. If you're a Swiss pensioner, it doesn't have to be expensive. I mean, I know we're in residency for investment or citizenship by investment, which, you know, requires a substantial investment or a donation. Mm-hmm. There are still options for people that want to retire, for example. Okay. And in the case of Mauritius, if you can transfer to yourself 2,000 per month, you can retire there. If you're not a pensioner and if you're younger, you can simply buy invested to property there. I think it's about 375,000, and you can get the residency card. So this is something that you can combine with holidays if you like to go to these places. Yeah. And you invest into property, but what's more important, you have another residency card and you can fly there in case there is another COVID or another conflict. And this is something a lot of people understand now, and that's why they come to us. Yes. This is talking about global trends. We will come to these trends.
Yes. It's like maybe everyone that listens to us is as fascinated as I was when I first heard it, because honestly, it never actually crossed my mind. Me having two citizenships that allow me a lot of mobility and safety, stability, I never thought about it, but I totally get why it is a thing. And I like how you put it that you diversify your investments. So why should you not diversify your
global
residence.
Mobility.
And I think people definitely need you for that, because I wouldn't know how to acquire another passport somewhere. It requires a lot of knowledge of the different regulations and rules. Not every country is the same, I assume. Some for sure require high funds. Others do it differently.
In general, if you look into it, you know, you are looking at options that start probably for both citizenship and residency that start from, if it's for investment, 100K, and it can end up with a few million if we go up to Austria. Before, we were helping lots of clients to acquire Maltese citizenship through investment. But last year, something happened. European Court of Justice ruled out that, you know, they didn't agree with the whole passport for investment. So what's happening right now in Europe, there is something in the legislation of each country that allows you to grant citizenship for exceptional services, or you have to be exceptional and you have to do something exceptional to be accepted for the country to grant you its citizenship. So this is something Malta and Austria have, but you have to be exceptional. You have to come to me, we will talk and see how exceptional you are. And then there is a possibility maybe to be granted citizenship, only in this case. But otherwise, it's quite hard to get European citizenship right
I
now.
Thought
unless,
so. Yeah.
Yes, unless, of course, you
you live there. Yeah, then it's
that's
different.
But by saying that, this, you know, the value to our clients in what we do is that they can actually acquire lots of European residency for investment. And they don't have to physically move there. Mm-hmm. They don't have to become tax residents. They don't have to learn the language. And this is something that is very attractive to them, that they don't have to do. They have
it's
the
not
choice.
Only about the citizenship.
They have the choice, actually. Yeah. They can either just have a residency card, which helps them to be mobile, and they can move to that country in any way. I can, you know, let's talk about Brexit, which just happened recently. When Brexit happened, what happened is that UK citizens couldn't just go. They lost the right, basically, of settlement in the EU. They couldn't just go and stay there as much as they like, which drove another wave of clients to us. They went for EU residencies in Portugal, in Greece, in Italy.
Where the weather is better than in UK.
To Switzerland, so they could they could keep this mobility and they could go anytime they like to Europe. So this is what I wanted to mention. You asked me about the investment. In general, if you are thinking of acquiring either a passport or a residency card, you should think about probably using 10 to 20% of your net worth. To contribute to one of these countries. So if we talk about Caribbean passport, that would allow you access to, that will give you access to the EU and to some other countries. They start at around 250,000. So you should have, or your family should have, probably around 3 million to be able to participate in this.
When people come to you, is there some very common misconceptions that they have, like misunderstandings you come across or what they underestimate.
Of course, but this is our job to explain to them. They, yes, they cannot know it, you know.
Yeah, of course.
They come to us and they say, we need a travel document and we need it very fast. So what they expect from us, you know, if they give them a certain time frame, for example, they say, you know, can I get it like in 4 months or 5 months? They expected maybe a residency card in such a short time frame. But the thing is that we can never guarantee the exact time frames because we're dealing with governmental authorities, because there are certain additional questions that can be asked, certain additional documents that should be provided, and this takes time. So what I do when a client comes to me, I, you know, it's managing the expectations, right? I'm sure you know all about it.
Yes.
While working with your clients. So this is probably one thing, is the time frame, and it can be quite frustrating. Another, I think this is the main thing that I came across anyway,
yeah,
you know. When thinking
the time frame is an issue when it comes to taxes as well. People are like, yeah, I now submitted my taxes, so when will it be assessed? And then sometimes we have to say, can be anything between 2 weeks and 3 years.
Yeah,
let's see. And that's also managing expectations, as you just put it. It can take time.
This is actually, yes. I can feel the pain in that, especially being in Switzerland, you know, where you can get your tax bill like for last year, for this year, for next year. And they keep like there is a time frame of really 3 years when they can send it to you.
Yes.
You never know how much at the end is it going to be.
Yeah, it's like having several balls in the air
exactly,
at the same time.
Yes. Exactly.
So what I hear from you is it's not a fast thing. It's something that is coming with a certain investment, but it is something that's absolutely doable and manageable if you do it right.
Exactly. Well, basically how this whole thing came to exist, and let me put it this way, there are certain governments and countries that like to raise foreign direct investment. I can give you an example of St. Kitts. They rolled out the program in 1984, and then our chairman, Kellen, he helped them to structure it. And what happened there is, and kids in Nevis made their money from selling sugarcane, and this what came into the budget. And at one point, they realized they're going to run out of it. And what are you going to do if you're a small Caribbean country faced with the problem of your main product is diminishing?
Yeah,
you don't have anything else. Your population isn't able to produce enough funds for your budget. Rolling out a program like this to attract entrepreneurs. Let me get this straight. Like, there is very strict due diligence process for all of these programs. You know, if you have to prove that your source of funds is clear and, you know, you're of good character, and then only then the country will accept you. Yes, a lot of countries are looking into this option. I mean, it's really working both ways, because what these entrepreneurs get, they get global mobility, you know, on one side, and the country gets the funds needed to actually support their own infrastructure, to build roads, to build hospitals, some money aside for education for their kids. It is very important. Now, I want to also mention here that on one side, we help clients to apply for those programs, but on the other side, we're a government advisory. We actually help governments to develop these programs. And the most recent one that I would like to mention is Nauru. I like it a lot because Nauru is in Oceania. It's a small island off the coast of Australia.
Did you have to go there to
No.
I'm sorry for you.
I think there is only one hotel on the island.
Oh, really?
And I think only, I checked yesterday, 200 tourists visited per year. I mean, so far. But I hope with what we're doing, we will attract a lot more infrastructural investment to the country, and a lot more tourists will come because it's a beautiful island with like white sands, it's surrounded by coral reef palms. It has around 10,000
inhabitants only. Okay.
Yes, and you know, but the problem that Nauru is facing because of the global warming and this climate change, it's only 21,000 square kilometers. It's losing, it can lose its land to water, and this is something that should be prevented. So what we did is we helped them to develop a citizenship by investment program, and all it's donation based, and this money will go. It's called Climate Resilience Program. This money will go into a fund that would help to tackle this problem. And I think this is a very important part of what we do. Yeah, so this could be good both ways.
So Nauru can finance programs to actually protect their land, like physically?
Improve infrastructure and fight global warming. And the first family that actually received Nauru passports was a German family.
Okay.
Yes. And the investment is not so high. Like it starts from 95,000. Not investment, sorry, donation. This is a donation.
Yeah.
So this is something, you know, if you're a European, if you're French or German, and they, you know, if you're thinking to have something else, you know, I think what's better way to get yourself another passport in case something happens in your own country, maybe you want to move and live somewhere else. What if Germany or France introduce wealth taxes, for example, for its citizens? Wouldn't it be perfect to have something else? But then your money is actually gone into supporting something important. Like it's not just... So, you know, I like it every way you look at it. You know, you can find lots of good things for each party involved.
So I'm sure... You have plenty of stories. You have more than a decade, and you must meet very interesting people. Tell us two or three stories that stick to your mind.
Let me tell you something. When I first joined Hand & Partners, I actually told you about my educational background, but I was working for a single family office here in Zurich, and the children of the person who owned this single family office, they were interested in Maltese citizenship, and Hand & Partners just developed the program, and it took, I think, almost a year for everything to be in place. So people were, you know, registering their name and getting ready to start with applications. And I was on the side of this family office. I was, you know, finding out about the conditions and everything, and for the children. And then this is how I got hired by Hand & Partners, actually, because at one point I saw that they're looking for someone, and I kind of knew about Malta at that point. So this is how I ended up in the company.
Okay.
Just to answer your very first question.
Yeah.
And then what happened is I spent my first 4 years just helping Maltese ultra high net worth individuals to apply for Maltese citizenship. And as a part of my work, and Maltese due diligence checks were the strictest that I ever came across in this industry. I mean, you had to basically prove how did you earn your money, starting from the first dollar that you had to whatever you have right now, and everything needed to be supported by documents, by transactions, by everything.
Declarations, potential.
Tax declaration is a very good document, I must say, yes. So, because it shows everything. And a part of all of this was to sit down with them and to write a letter of explanation explaining all of this. Like, I've studied here, I have started this company, I did this and I did that. And as you would go through their history, it just made me realize at one point, because you hear so many interesting stories of, and most of them were first generation wealth creators, which are the most interesting to talk to from each point of view. And these are the ones that faced risk, overcame them. And, you know, it was amazing part of my work, because I learned so many ways on what can you do, but most of them did have to overcome risks at one point. And the fact that they came to us and were applying for this was also part of the story that didn't go into that letter, but it really played out so importantly for these people later on in their lives. I still have calls from these clients, you know, thanking me for doing it at that time. And a couple of stories that I can tell you. Okay, without giving names, I will start with one, because this kind of relates to Switzerland, and this could be something that our listeners could identify themselves with. I had a family from an emerging country, and they came to Switzerland. The whole family moved to Switzerland with their children, and they moved by setting up a company, and then the company hired the main applicant as their managing director, which was, you know, quite easy to get. But you know, the thing is that when you do that, you get your work permit valid for 1 year, and then it's renewed every year. L permit, exactly. And the problem with that family was the children went to school. They've settled, you know, they
found friends,
rented a house. And the problem was that the main applicant was never sure if his permit is going to be renewed or not. And in case it's not renewed, that means that he needs to get the kids out of school and they need to go somewhere, which is quite uncomfortable if you're in business. So what they did is they came to us and I helped them to get multi-citizenship. It took them a year and a half at that time. And then they just registered here as multi-citizens, where they had the free right of settlement in Switzerland as Europeans. So this is one of the stories where this actually did help the quality of life, access to education, access to employment. And at the same time, they do create value for the host country because they actually bring knowledge, they bring money into the country, they hire other people, they buy property, they, you yes. know, they contribute.
They actually
so,
live here.
So it's, yes, exactly. So this is one story. Another story was with another family. Family had very successful IT business in their country of origin. But they felt, but more than 10 years ago, that something, it's just a case of, you know, not agreeing with the way country goes politically and, you know, having options. So they were smart enough to realize that maybe they should look for other options. And I'm telling you, 12 years ago when I just started, not many people thought about it. This family looked into this. Into this problem, and what they did is they acquired EU citizenship through investment. They are living globally, but they've started an amazing business in the US. It's promising to be very successful. It's basically vending machines for hot food, the ones that hospitals can have.
Yeah,
they could have them at the train stations, same way you buy chocolates and water maybe when it's 12 at night. And these ones will be serving fresh, hot, homemade food, which is amazing, which I don't know why no one thought about, but he used all his knowledge in building the other business, and he brought his knowledge, and he started off in the US. And it's going to go global, I think. So this is another story, which is quite interesting. He basically managed to sell the company, save the money that he actually earned through hard work, and go elsewhere. And he didn't lose anything.
Because he had the chance to go.
Which is unfortunately not true for many others. They didn't think about it.
Yeah, that's true. So, I mean, you mentioned this family that lived here in Switzerland before. Is there any other input that you have for people in Switzerland?
Of course, this is actually something else that I'm seeing locally right now. It all started from, again, citizens of a couple of countries that are in conflict with each other. The problem is when your country is in conflict and there is military subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And you are living outside of the, you're living in Switzerland and your country is in conflict. You, what your country can do to get you into the army and, you know, go and serve your country, what they can do is they can ask you to come and renew your international passport locally.
Okay.
And they basically tell you you're not allowed to do it through embassies anymore, which creates a risk if you're a male. If you're employed elsewhere, that you might go there and not come back.
Or be here, so, but not have a valid passport any longer.
Exactly. And you registered here on your primary city passport. So the best thing to do is just to acquire another one when you're here in Switzerland and come and register with Swiss authorities on your other passport.
Yeah.
And let the other one run out because you're not planning to go back to a country to renew it while the conflict still lasts.
Okay.
This is something that one of the trends that I noticed here in Switzerland. Another thing is that if you're coming from outside of Europe and if you're employed here in Switzerland, it's the same thing. Kids are in school. Your life is here.
having peace of mind. From what I feel from you, this is like one of the main emotions that is linked to your job, peace of mind. What people are actually looking for, I mean, no one is looking for 5 different passports. This is not like, it's not like you collect it and you hang it on your wall, but you are looking.
Although it's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea, depending on the passport. But it's more about what you acquire through this passport is peace of mind.
Exactly. Peace of mind for you and
your family.
You know, you're taking care of your family. You're taking care about the future generations. I mean, think of people that went through genocide or Holocaust, or, you know, it's in their blood. I think if you live in countries that never had conflict or didn't have it for long, like Switzerland, you know, why would you think about it? But I think COVID and the ensuing conflicts close to Europe made them think about it. And what I want to mention here, this is a process. You have to prepare for it. You have to plan well in advance. This is not buying a pair of shoes, you know. So this is something that you need to think of beforehand.
Yes. Hey, Liana, thank you so much. It's a fascinating field you are working in. It's kind of the intersection of identity and strategy. So where do I belong? Where do I feel secure? Where do I want my children to grow up? It's all emotional questions, and they deserve thoughtful planning. If you're listening and considering a move, a second residence, or are simply curious how global mobility actually works, take your time. Ask bigger questions, please, and remember, big international decisions really rarely exist in isolation. You'll find all details about Liana and her work in the show notes. Of course, also what we do at Tuxen, you'll find all the links below. Living internationally is bold. Understanding the layers behind it is even bolder. And when the big picture finally comes together, the noise tends to disappear. So, just like that, you've been listening to Cracks in the City. Thank you so much, Liana, for...
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
It was so interesting to listen to this. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that never thought about it and are quite amazed of the possibility to even do that. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Zule.